Hallelujah. Welcome, everybody. My name's Reverend Bill Cruz, and God bless you. A couple of weeks ago, I was in New York at the United Nations General Assembly, Special General Assembly on Children. And they had children there from all over the world, from everywhere. And at one of the forums, and it was at that awful time when there was all that awful war going on in Jenin, and there was Palestinian people being killed and Israeli people being killed and all of that. And we had all these young children, 16-year-old children there. And one of the little girls got up, a little Palestinian girl, and she said, "I cry for my people. I cry for my people, what is happening to my people. I just cry for them." And the moderator said, "Well, we should hear from Miriam over there." And Miriam was a little 16-year-old girl from Jerusalem. And she got up and she said, "Imrahim," she said, "ever since we've been here, you've looked at me with eyes of hate," she said, "with eyes of hate." And then she leant right across the room and everybody stood still and she said, "I am not your enemy." She said, "I am not your enemy." And ordinary people are not each other's enemies. They are not each other's enemies. Yet, propelled by governments... led by small-minded little people, we're led to believe the opposite. And isn't it ironic? Isn't it ironic that with all that's going on in this crazy world today, and with all the petty posturing of all our so-called religious and political leaders, the only one who seems to be behaving in a Christian way is the Dalai Lama, isn't it? And doesn't he, with his warmth, compassion and humanity, tower over all of them? Towers over all of them. And that's because great religious leaders ennoble all religions. You, sir, to me are a symbol. You, sir, to me and to everyone here are a symbol of hope. Because of you, we know that love does triumph over hate, that peace will triumph over war, and that this world ultimately is a world of peace and justice, where simply by doing that which is good, Tibet cannot but prevail. And little Jewish and little Palestinian and little Chinese and little Tibetan girls can live in peace. So let's all welcome the Dalai Lama, His Holiness. Has all the Dharma wheels and all Tibetan symbols on it. And when I took it back to my church, I said, "I'd like to use it as a communion scarf because it's the holiest thing we know." And they said, "Do it." And when I baptise children, which is the most precious thing we do, parents come and they wrap their children in it. And the old ladies of my congregation, old Christian ladies, they take this and they wash it in Lux and they love it. God bless you. Thank you. We now have to invite Professor Rees forward to explain a special celebration that goes on now.
Thank you. Thank you. May I first of all, on behalf of all of you and your holiness, acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, the Eora people of Australia. Your Holiness, I have the responsibility to invite my colleague Catherine in a few minutes' time to award you the Sydney Peace Foundation's medal for your tireless work, for non-violence, for human rights and for peace with justice. You have taught us about the interdependence of all peoples, and that is a lesson which has also been passed down for centuries from the wisdom of Australian Aboriginal people. We honour you also for your teaching about the unity of all peoples. It is a unity which expresses a need for spiritual nurture and coherence. It is a unity which can tell this country a great deal about its sense of national identity, a national identity that rejoices in our differences, a national identity that knows that we can experience security by welcoming others, that we can imagine a world that needs no border protection. Your Holiness, we honour you also for your expression of compassion for all peoples, a compassion expressed in poetry, in painting, in dance and in music, in food and in hospitality, in costume and in ceremony. It's a compassion which I'm sure you know was also expressed by John Lennon, that wonderful Beatle, in the beautiful song, Imagine. And I imagine that all the members of this audience can see you singing and dancing along with the Beatles. That song contained the lines, "You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. The world can come together. The world can be as one." The Sydney Peace Foundation, which I represent, is a very significant coalition in this city, a coalition of community, business, media and educational interests, united to promote the cause of peace, well, not of peace, but of peace with justice. We want that goal to be the focus of national conversation, whether in exchanges in families or in deliberations about peace, in deliberations about social policies, or even in bargaining about the oil revenue from the Timor Gap. We are very pleased, Your Holiness, that your visit to Australia coincides with the birth of the world's newest nation, East Timor. Finally, and I'm coming to an end, we honour you for your courage in expressing the needs of a common humanity, your courage in sticking up for the principles of universal human rights, and your courage in standing up to any group or country that thinks that the possession of overwhelming force of any kind entitles them to bully. For your courage in standing up to those who think that force, whether it's by militarization or other means, entitles them to do what we like, we express our solidarity. Non-violence is the means and ends of peace with justice. And it's a non-violence which also expresses the the centrality of your ideas about a unity of all peoples, and which was captured by the beautiful Australian Aboriginal poet Oojaru of the tribe Noongar in a memorable poem called All One Race, in which she wrote, "I'm for humankind, not colour jibes. I'm for humanity, never mind tribes. I'm for humanity, never mind place. I'm international, and never mind race." Thank you for your compassion. Thank you for your humour. And thank you for your courage in sticking up for the cause of a common humanity. Now it's my great pleasure to ask my colleague, Catherine Greiner, the chair of the Sydney Peace Foundation, to present the Foundation's gold medal to His Holiness the Dalai Lama.
Tangal tangu de ande de ande chaga le sera na de tsi shuwi.
First of all, I would like to express my deep appreciation for the award of Peace Medal from the Sydney Peace Foundation.
Okay. I didn't put my neck. Now this Buddhist monk with big metal. Perhaps some Nalanda masters who haven't received this kind of thing may have a little jealousy.
I would also like to express my appreciation to Reverend Bill Cruz for doing the introduction.
Certainly, it's a large gathering. You come, listen to my talk with, I think, sincere motivation. I very much appreciate. And also, some people, some group outside or somewhere. This camera is yours, the problem. This one, no? So I hope, you see, through this modern technology, at least I think we can feel closely one another. So, I wanted to express some kind of a special hello to you. So, I think, in spite of different culture, different, I think, location, different way of life, we immediately, you see, come some kind of, I'll say, closeness sort of relations. I think because we are same human being and everybody loves human affection, human friendliness. So that my main, my main practice in order to develop unique, deeper spiritual experiences. Firstly, the human values must be there. The practice of human value, increasing or promote human value, then on top of that, the one's own unique religious spiritual experiences must develop. Without human, as a good quality, you can't develop genuine, meaningful spiritual experiences. So on the level on human value or human good qualities concerned, we all appreciate. We all actually, I think, should live with that quality in our day-to-day life. So, one of my main interest and main sort of effort to promote human good quality, human values, sense of caring one another, sense of sharing, and sense of community, and so on. So, last few days from Melbourne, then Canberra, and then here Sydney, I had the opportunity meeting with public and also student. So I'm really very much impressed the public sort of warm expression. So I'm very happy, and I would like to express my thank to concerned people who created this opportunity. So now, time always moves. After, I think, 1 hour, we will depart. Tomorrow I am going to New Zealand. The next 3 days there, then return to India. So physically we depart. Perhaps I think temporarily. But now important, we have to carry our day-to-day life. So just short moment sort of meeting, more sort of happy moment, is not sufficient. We should have happy months, years, and whole life. Now there, each individual, ourselves, are responsible. No one can help that. But we, each of us, have the same potential to create happy life. So therefore, now, my friends, brothers, sisters, are here inside as well as outside. you see, I think in modern time, people, I think sometimes too much sort of, attraction towards outside. Then little time to examine, to investigate deeply in inner world. So one I think my sort of request or suggestion is, now on, think more inner world. Of course, when you have some leisure time, your daily work, then of course you have to carry your own sort of work. But morning, early morning, or late evening, whenever you have some leisure time, then think about human mind, about human emotions. And that's, I think, worthwhile. Worthwhile. Mm. So now, in order to have happier life, elimination of all troubles of outside. No one can do that. Even with this body, old age, sickness, finally death, nobody or no force. There is up to now no method, you see, to overcome these things. Sooner or later we have to face these things. Then as a human society, some kind of disagreement, some kind of different opinions, some kind of a conflict always there. Even within one's own family, or within even oneself. You see, different ideas, different views, different understanding where. Sometimes it's contradictory and conflict there. So I think generally contradictory itself, nothing wrong. I think movement comes because of contradiction, because of different sort of energy or different sort of power, different forces. So, in idea or the also opinion, contradictory views, and eventually, you see, bring more new meaningful ideas. So, therefore, contradiction itself is nothing wrong. Contradictory is part of the nature. Now, the thing is, we should have the ability to overcome these contradictory and make use for positive way. So when we face some problems like the old age or the illness or some kind of other problems or the problem outside, I think much depends on our own mental attitude. If your mental attitude, which help to maintain, sustain peace of mind, then even the hostile surrounding will not disturb your peace of mind. So, if on the other hand, if mind too much, agitation, too much, disturbed, then that person, although they physically use best sort of facility and also surrounded best close friends, that person will not get genuine sort of peace or happiness. So therefore, much depends on our mind. Now the transformation of mind, or shaping right kind of mental attitude. Now, intelligence, very helpful, but actually, I think emotion is the main factor. Right kind of emotions, that really help, you see, to build strength. Intelligence should be something like, method or wisdom to make distinction what emotion is useful, what emotion is harmful. Then use different reasons or different examples through intelligence. Then eventually develop conviction. Conviction eventually impact on our emotion. So usually, you see, people sometimes, I think, the people consider emotion, any emotion is something, embedded without emotion. Emotion don't do games or something. She meet emotion, she sees and she said it. Just other emotions, you know, halam, she can sense. Give it to what? I mean, emotion, yeah, positive or negative, you know, please.
Generally, people have the tendency that emotion is something negative. So when, for example, if people describe one individual as being too emotional, it's used in a sort of pejorative sense, as if emotion is a sort of a negative trait of an individual. However, I feel that that is not right. Within emotions, there are both positive and negative.
So those, it's a positive emotion, such as sense of caring, affection. This is also part of emotion, but these are very useful. Then hatred, fear, look down on other, too much pride. These are negative because these brings more uncomfortable. So now here I want to have a more detailed explanation. Now look, hatred, strong anger, and I think very strong greed. Now these emotions actually destructive. So it is important, you see, to know, to have clear sort of awareness and a conviction. Now these are destructive forces, destructive inner forces. Otherwise, you see, usually you see, we have the sort of, I think, the impression. These negative emotions, although sometimes we feel destructive, but still part of our mind is almost just natural. I think here, with clear sort of awareness, this destructive thing, and then make effort to reduce. Now, just is the clear sort of awareness, hatred is really destructive, negative. That kind of realization or awareness itself is eventually reduce force of anger, force of hatred. So, according to my own experience, as a result of sort of study or analytical meditation, the ill feeling towards other, hatred, these things, I fully convinced now these are destructive. These are real enemy of destroyer of my inner peace or inner happiness. So that realization, that conviction, eventually some effect, the force of negative emotion. Although sometimes you say anger comes, but never remain
long.
Remain long. So now, think the anger usually come as a protector, as a friend, as a trusted sort of friend. You face some problem, then anger come as a protector. Then also, you see, anger brought us, bring us some sort of new energy. Usually, you see, when we face some difficulties, even to talk, even argue, then some anger come. Then you argue, then eventually can be more forceful. So that apparently gives you more energy, more sort of strength. But if we analyze properly, then the energy which brings by the anger is usually I call blind energy. The energy, yes, come, but that energy whether become destructive or even it's a self-destruction, often happen. Because you see, very strong anger come. During that moment, the best part of our brain which can judge and short-term, long-term interest or consequences, now that part of brain cannot function properly while very strong anger is dominant in our brain. So therefore, the energy which brought by anger is actually the blind one. So sometimes I jokingly, mentioned as an example, before 59, when I was in Asa, I had two drivers. One driver, very short temper, his head bolt, bolt. And then one day, some repair work underneath of the car. So somehow, his head hit. So then he lost his temper. Then furthermore, hitting by his own head. So that means more suffering. So his anger brought more energy to hit back to car. If you use common sense, of course, this human flesh and the iron, that flesh will suffer, not I. So, and my own case, when I was in Tibet, pocket watch. not work well. So then I opened the bag, and some little instrument, try to move. It doesn't work still. So then I lost my temper. Then I hit that watch on table. So that guy, our experience, I think you all have same experience. Sometimes you lost our anger. Then further more sort of destructive works usually happen. So therefore, anger really, I think, blinds our sort of intelligence or power of judgment. And then another thing, peace of mind. No matter how powerful external enemy, no ability to destroy directly about peace of mind. Peace of mind directly can destroy by our inner negative emotion. Strong anger comes, the peace of mind automatically reduces or disappears. Or strong attachment comes, again peace of mind will diminish. So therefore, the fear, I think there are two kinds of fear. One fear, I think, because of too much self-centered, and then some kind of deep insight, lack of self-confidence, then fear comes. That kind of fear is harmful and can get rid if we get more inner strength. Then fear of
Of course, there are other types of very justified fears, such as if you are traveling on a plane, the concern that it might crash or you might have an accident in the car and so on.
Oh, this is some, I think, fear out of danger. That fear is good. That fear gives us more precaution. More precaution, the less sort of danger. So that kind of fear is good. Then also, I think the anger. some anger out of sense of concern. That anger is generally is positive. Anger out of ill feeling or negative sort of feeling, that is negative. Then also the feeling of I, equistic sort of attitude. Here also is two kinds. One, equistic sort of feeling, I, strong sense of strong I. The one kind of sense of strong I, which lead no hesitation to harm another, to neglect other's interest, or to disrespect other, or even exploit on other, abuse on other. Now that kind of egoistic feeling of I is bad, negative. Then another thing, the true reasoning, like I think out of sense of caring, is in spite of some difficulties, in spite of some cases sacrifice one's own privilege and help to other. You see, that kind of self-confidence, I should do, I can do, the which basis of willpower, determination, that kind of strong sense of I is positive. So in emotion, I think we need very careful sort of distinction. What emotion is positive, what emotion is negative, and also the pena under kasore. Pena lo sumu ji, yang ko chog wang le, sangol jia, nyamol jia. Chog, pena nyingji chog de jere, pena sen sumu yin, tempe su chag da.
And also within some emotions which are even hostile emotions, again, we need to understand that if they are motivated by more positive emotions, such as compassion, they can be transformed into positive energy and positive force.
So, like hatred, is really destroyer of our inner peace. And also destroyer of peaceful atmosphere within our own family or community. And I think long run, the hatred, strong anger, these are, I think, destroyer of our whole life. On the other hand, without anger, we can carry challenge, the problem, and even you see your sort of so-called enemy, if necessary, without anger, through wisdom, through intelligence, some cases through compassion, sense of concern, you can take a countermeasure. Sometimes I example as a joke, if your neighbor not very friendly and sometimes creates a little uncomfortable for you, and because of that, eventually you develop some kind of ill feeling towards your neighbor. That constantly, occur in your mind, and your whole mood eventually is become difficult or uncomfortable. Then, the first casualty, not your neighbor, but your own children or your family member, they will suffer because your mood is unhappy. So when your friend or even your children is approached to you, you feel very
frustrated.
You're frustrated. So you may show some negative attitude, and also sometimes you may shout if your mood not good. Your friends usually often call on you, but these friends then eventually feel, now our friend, these days now our friend's mood is not good, so better not call there, not go there. Then the visitors is reduced. Then eventually, you see, you feel very unhappy, so your curtains also close, and you remain in the room, something like, I think, like a prisoner. Sometimes even you may sort of hit, like that. So then tranquilizers, sleeping pills, and alcohols. Then eventually, your physical condition also suffer, ruin. And genuine smile on your face also eventually disappear. So that is your neighbor. If neighbor really, they feel bad, towards you, then I think your neighbor really fulfilled their desire. Isn't it? Without any sort of action from your neighbor, because of your own anger, your own hatred, destroy your own fortune. Other hand, your neighbor, in spite of some negative attitude towards you, still you remain calm, happy. Always visitors come and go, and you also have some picnics, some holidays, and your work carries successfully. And your fortune increase, then eventually your neighbor, may feel little, worried. And furthermore, if necessary, you can take counter measures according to your legal system, and through that way, you can beat your neighbor without negative emotion, through reasoning, and if possible, out of concern, your neighbor take advantage on you unreasonably, then, of course, it needs check, it needs countermeasure, but that out of sense of concern. If let him or let her continuously doing these kind of things, and eventually spoil themselves. So, out of concern, out of respect, justice, you take countermeasure, isn't it? So, therefore, the ill feeling, hatred is really useless. Without hatred, if necessary, some countermeasure we can take. So they analyze, think in these lines, the anger. Eventually, develop some kind of clear awareness and conviction. The hatred is really bad to oneself and nobody. Then also, according to the medical science, the frustrated mind, fear, these are very bad for health. So this, also is related with the too much karura, self-centered, or in other words, the contrary the motivation of compassion. Sense of caring is taking care of others, not just forgetting. Not neglect, but is it taking care about others' welfare? The opposite, just think oneself, very self-centered. I think these two emotions, very different. Think more about other. Then that brings more inner strength. And more inner strength, as far as your own concern, less fear. So more deeper satisfaction and happy.
So when you have that kind of inner resource and inner strength grounded upon some form of altruism, then even when you confront adversities, you have much greater resilience.
On the other hand, self-centered attitude, very extreme self-centered, that usually bring more sort of feeling of uncertainty, insecurity, and it brings fear. And then, according to some medical scientists, those people who often use word mine, me, I, these people have greater risk of heart attack. So, that I think, the explanation is, or logic is, I feel, they think more about other than, as I mentioned earlier, your mind widened. So then, your own problem appears not much sort of significance. Although it's the same problem, but then, because your own attitude is something very wide, so therefore, you get the feeling, oh, this I can manage. On the other hand, just extreme self-centered sort of attitude. Think just oneself. Then hold our mind narrow. So within that small space, small place, and one's own problem, then appears something really unbearable. So that makes differences. I think one small example, the other day also I mentioned recently, in recent month, I developed some illness. I'm here. Blow stomach. Yeah, I don't know the particular word. While I lay down on bed, very painful. A lot of sort of
sweating.
So liquid is water is come from the body. Very painful. But then, at that time, because that takes in Bihar, in one of the poorest the Indian state. So that very day, I passing through some villages near Patna, between Patna and Bodh Gaya. So that day, I saw a lot of poor people, some children, sick children, polios, sick patients, children. Seems to see no one caring, no one taking care. And then one old person, also it seems no one is taking care, and seems to be sick. So during the whole days and night, in my eye, in my mind, always you see, reflect these poor children and that old person. So that reduced the feeling of my own pain, because of my own sort of ill, because of the pain. So at least there is some benefit. It's the sense of concern. These poor people really, I think, dominant in my mind. So that reduced the feeling of my own sort of, the illness here. So just like that. You see, these things, they think more, sense of concern about other, is actually, I think, really strengthening one's own sort of inner being. So very, very helpful. So like that, you see, analyze these without touching difficult philosophies or some other sort of mysterious sort of complicated things. Simply look and judge or watch our own experiences. Then eventually we know some of the emotions are very bad, some of the emotions are very positive. So then through that way, make effort with realization of such emotions, such as sense of caring, sense of community, these things are good, and deliberately try to increase. Then negative emotion, destructive emotion, with realization, try to minimize. Of course, when anger, how to confront anger? There, I think, some are very forceful, some are mild. So the mild one, I think, at the moment, one anger about to come, then try to see from different angle. Now, some is a very tragic sort of situation. If you just look, then you see, because of the tragic situation, anger about to develop. Then try to see from different angle. Or that tragic situation may bring some positive,
opportunity.
Positive opportunity. Now, my own case, I lost my own country, become refugee. But this one side, very unfortunate. But one side, one aspect, that brings me more opportunity, meeting with these different people, without any concern of protocol or these things. Simply, I can exchange my views, I can discuss whatever I feel. So therefore, the tragedy, one bad element, or one bad thing, also, if you look from different angle, there may be some positive things. So that also is one way. So like that, then mild anger at the moment, about to come, you can stop, you can reduce. But then very strong anger, then at the moment is it difficult. So then the method, the usual sort of, when our mind normal, then is analyze these sort of the inner world, more often, check or think more inner world, then eventually you have more sort of awareness, and accordingly some new convictions. And that something like, I think, the immune system. You see, develop healthy body, healthy mind. So then, these negative emotion, although come, but much weaker. So that's one way. At the moment, you see, the negative emotion comes, then rather difficult, you see, to face it, to control it. And sometimes I think even forcefully control may not good. So like that. So that's the way, you see, the way of training of our mind. Nothing to do with religion. Simply, you see, I think making new shape of the physical. Similarly, making new shape of our emotion. Through that, our attitude then change. So therefore, in order to lead more happier, more calm days and nights and weeks and months, some training our mind through tackling human emotion with human intelligence. I think that's the proper way. So in modern education, very much emphasis importance of education, taking care of brain, but seems not adequate taking care of warm heart. So now here, I think we need, personal level or individual level, in family, you see, taking more sort of pay attention about development of good heart, these basic good human qualities. And then parents in your family, they taking care, firstly, your own children with affection and because of the long-sighted, and then also to those sort of, your neighbors, I think, try to create that kind of more compassionate, what's the day?
Atmosphere.
Oh, compassionate atmosphere. Then those people who involve in education field, keep in your mind, is it the importance of basic development of warm heart, human good quality. I feel is more pay attention about that respect. So that's a proper way, you see, to create more happier human family, and through that way, human community, and through that way, you see, there is through that way, I think one effective contribution regarding a better humanity. So that's about my sort of usual, I mean, what's it, practice, as well as my conviction. So this also, all religion, you see, carry these kind of sort of message. So, believer or non-believer, so let us try be a warm-hearted human being. So after our departing, keep these points in your mind and carry experiment. I often used to tell people, if you feel these are something interesting, then implement, experiment. Eventually you gain deeper experiences. But otherwise, if you feel these are not much interest, you have, one of you, only interest about money or some other things, then, alright, doesn't matter. Forget it, by what I said. This doesn't matter. No one can impose. And I always make clear, I'm not sort of interested to spread Buddha Dharma or kaza, to promotion.
Propagate
Buddha Dharma. So, this individual sort of individual right. But I think one thing, as far as taking care of warm heart, that I think should, any people, I think should take more thing, more should make more effort to develop warm heart, because this is the seed of our happiness. This is the seed of our future. The intelligence, money, power, these are secondary. Top most important is warm heart. Whether rich, poor, or as it educated or uneducated, Easterner, Westerner, Southerner, Northerner, believer, non-believer, same. All human beings, all want happiness, all do not want suffering, and all have the same potential, the potential of happy life in our own heart. So that's, I think, important. So that's all. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now some questions.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Oh, so many questions. Yes, read.
After September 11, what is the answer to this sort of hatred and aggression?
Here, I usually feel, you see, two levels. One level, immediate sort of immediate measure, that, you see, the leaders in government, you see, taking care. Certainly, I have no idea how to do. I don't know. Then long run, just as we discussed, the promotion of basic human good quality, promote human sort of sense of oneness of entire humanity. And then here, and also I think very important now, modern, I think important to know, in modern time, the interest of ours and theirs is very much linked. So under that circumstances, the very concept, her century-old concept, we and they, is no longer there. They also part of you. So therefore, interest of others is interest of myself. So taking care of others is ultimately benefit to oneself. I think that, realize that, aware that, then accordingly, you see, treat with our problems, with our neighbor, with our people who have different opinions. Basically, they are also part of humanity. So, within that way, then the spirit of reconciliation, the spirit of compromise, and through that way, through dialogue, try to solve all the conflict. I think peaceful resolution of conflict. Now, that is now many places, now you see, growing. I think further we need further sort of city.
Effort.
Yeah.
Effort.
Further sort of effort to increase these things. I think that's the way. So eventually, I think in our mind, I think we should have, whenever we saw some conflict, an immediate reaction should be how to solve this through dialogue. Not is it through how to solve this through force. So that, I think, that kind of attitude eventually should be part of our life. That's the, I think, proper way. Second question.
What would you say to a person who is facing a fatal illness? No.
I think according the person, if the person believer, then according one's own belief, one's own faith, say, is it faith to God, although it's very painful, and now near die, one life, now this life, now nearly ending, and then naturally, you see, frightening or some sort of, what is it, kasota?
Fear.
Tunghe.
Pain and fear.
And then I think the God, creator, so there must be some meaning. I think that's one way. And if it is someone who accepts the rebirth, then that means just like it's a change clothes. So the old clothes are no longer can usable, then change new one. So like that. So you see, thinking of these lines, then non-believer, I think, again, I think differences of age. If someone old, say, I think beyond the 70, 80, then I think now, quite natural now, and so actually, that is part of our life. Nothing is unusual. That is part of our life. There's birth. Everybody is a happy birthday. Always is a very, very sort of consider a very important day. That means preparation of that day. Birthday there, that day come. We want birthday, do not want that day. That is illogical. So the important is the while we alive, our life lead reasonable and some meaningful. That is important. So I think the non-believer, I think if old one, then now the natural sort of end now coming. So in my whole life, if you see some good things done, then think and joy. What's joy?
Rejoice.
Rejoice. If a lifetime something, I mean, some bad things done, then I don't know. I think, then I think not much use to think these. Just forget whatever you've done. Everything now too late and finished. So I think better to forget.
Do you think there will be a time when you can return to Tibet free in your lifetime?
Pasa.
Free in your lifetime. You will be able to return to Tibet free in your lifetime?
Yes, I think in a few words, Tibet situation is something like that. If you look locally, what is happening there, then almost I think a lot of the destruction of environment, large scale of kasa, deforestation, like that, and also a lot of sort of I think restrictions about study of Tibetan culture and Buddhism, and so on. So you see, the things really desperate, and you get some kind of feeling of hopelessness. But since the Tibet problem is not due to natural disaster, but mainly, sometimes I jokingly is telling people, because new guest without proper invitation. So that is a guest is come with gun. So that is the problem. Therefore, is the Tibet issue very much related with the development in China proper. So now look China, People's Republic of China, a great nation, ancient nation, sophisticated cultured nation. Yes, in spite, you see, no matter how sort of powerful, how big nation, still part of the world. So you see, China have to go, will go according along the global trend. That is global trend, democracy, openness, freedom of speech, freedom of faith, freedom of press, rule of law, right of self-determination. These are the global trend. A totalitarian system. Now ending, no future. That's very clear. So therefore, People's Republic of China. Now already, compare, you see, today's China, compare, you see, 20, 30 years ago. It's much changed. So China is in the process of changing. So judging from that, you see, Tibet issue is very, very hopeful. And also, you see, Tibetan spirit inside Tibet, very strong. So therefore, basically, I'm optimistic. Yes, now next.
Your Holiness, do you separate mind from heart, or are they different aspects of the same thing? Although it's difficult to fully understand the implications of the language, the linguistic etymology here, but from the Buddhist point of view, when we speak of mind and heart, we're talking about different aspects of the same phenomenon. Heart is the effective aspect of that phenomenon. And when we speak of mind, we are looking at it, speaking it more from the cognitive perspective. According to Buddhist philosophy, are men and women equal in status?
I think basically yes. The Buddha, as he gave the same opportunity, the highest ordination, monk, nun, bhikshu, bhikshu vow, bhikshuni, bhikshu vow. However, in some practice, there are some, emphasis, the monk made superior. I think here, I think time change. So some, in Vinaya sort of tradition, perhaps we may need modification. But that, for that, you see, we need some kind of international Buddhist Sangha conference. Then discuss. Otherwise, you see, one individual Sangha community, like you said, Tibetan Sangha community, you see, cannot take decision. So this is where the Vinaya is concerned, especially in Burma, Thai, Sri Lanka. You see, you have very strong sort of the Theravada Vinaya tradition. Tibetan tradition, Mula Savasiddhi. So the Pratimoksha, and basically it's the same. Now, for example, the four Parajikas, then 13, what you call the Sangha, all these is the same, except there's some minor precepts, some differences. According to Tibetan Pratimoksha in Sanskrit, the Mula Savasiddhi sort of tradition, the the precepts, 253 precepts, the Theravada, the Pratimoksha in Pali, 227 precepts. So little sort of minor sort of differences, but otherwise it's the same. Therefore, the Vinaya is concerned, we need some kind of international Sangha conference. So, then in Tantrayana, of course, the emphasis, the importance of family, also there. So that's the overall picture, the Buddhist sort of tradition, I think, very equal. This is my feeling. But then some feminists always find something wrong here and there. So this, I think we need further discussions, yes. Then,
what does your day usually consist of?
Now my day started 3:30 morning. I think many other brothers, sisters, I think in deep sleep. So, 3:30, wake up. Then around 5, my breakfast. So my younger brother sometimes teasing me, the main reason to get early is breakfast, not prayer. So anyway, the morning usually is 4 or 5 hours, some meditation, some prayer, some visualization. And then, if you see, no office work, then mainly you see reading, study. I really fond read or study some of the old text wrote by Nalanda scholars. Just before coming here, 1 month I had one retreat, so no sort of audience. So while I'm recitation going on, carrying on, I read some of the text, like Buddha Palitas, Buddha Bodhidharma's text as well as the Bhava Viveka Prabhu Lingdenji and as well as the Chandrakirti's commentary of Mulakarika of Nagarjuna. So, very interesting. Very, very interesting. And also very moving. Very moving. Then usually it's some office work. So listen, or some meetings. Then some different decisions about the refugee community. And also sometimes to say how to deal with, and of course it's a Tibetan issue as a whole, like that. Then, of course, as a Buddhist monk, after lunch is no meal. But sometimes, if I feel very hungry, then with salutation to Buddha, a few biscuits. And my evening tea. But in Thailand, and in Sri Lanka, I think very strict. After lunch, is no meal. In my case, not that much strict. But usually, it's no dinner, no cooked sort of meal. Just a few biscuits like that. So, then I think the vegetarian, some time ago, I think in 1965, I become vegetarian. Then next 2 years, then 2 years I remain pure vegetarian, no egg, genuine vegetarian. But then I develop, hepatitis. You see, this is a problem. Then eventually I return my original sort of Tibetan sort of habit, diet. A non-vegetarian. And then recently, now some years, few years, I think within a week, most of the days, vegetarian, then occasionally, if is the meat available, then some non-vegetarian food. So that is my sort of diet. But at the same time, I always see, since my childhood, actually my childhood, I think 13 years old, since then, they changed a lot of Tibetan government festival, ceremonial festival. Usually a lot of meat. I changed into vegetarian food. Then also, now in India also, now recent years, we start some serious movement. All our bigger monastic institutions now become vegetarian. Their diet completely vegetarian. Of course, individual, some may find difficulties, but as far as communication is concerned, all now become vegetarian. So, then also, I think all our Buddhist sort of centers, individual, that's up to individual, but your common sort of meal, sometimes some festivals, then should be vegetarian food served. So, whether we individually can be pure vegetarian or not, I think we have to work for promotion of vegetarianism. After all, when we think about the limitless killing of fish and then other animal and some small insects or shrimps or some of these things, especially in the Chinese tradition, small insects, they're very fond. So I think people, those fisheries, no sense of sort of life, feeling, Now in India also, in the name of progress, now a lot of poultry is now coming. Oh, chicken. With vegetables. Chickens, you see, there. Very sad. So I think even in the economy field, and also health viewpoint, I think it is really worthwhile promote vegetarianism. Thank you. Then?
How do we balance or manage the daily tasks of our lives with our spiritual life?
Actually, you see, practice of Dharma is like medicine. So medicine, whenever you get ill, then that is the right time to take medicine. So similarly, when we remain in our own house, you see, no trouble, no problem, then it's a practice of Dharma. Okay, but something like without illness, the medicine, not much use, yes. So, in our real daily life comes, or where this is some painful experience, some you say, about to lose our anger, about to lose, jealousy, about to lose, too much pride, or about to sort of commit exploitation, or telling lie, or bully. Also, you see, about to act, pretension. And then, these are the right time to think about spirituality. Oh, I should not lose my anger. I should not harm other. I should not tell lie. I should be honest. I should be truthful. So that's the real purpose. So I think the spirituality, the spiritual life, actually must go along with our daily life. Then meditation in early morning is something like recharging our battery. So the actual use of the battery is in daily life.
Two last questions.
Yes. Now last two questions.
I enjoy meditating, but whenever I do so, my knees start to feel painful. And my legs sometimes fall to sleep. Do you have any helpful hints to avoid these problems?
Although the posture in certain meditation is considered important, but usually it's no importance. Whatever you feel more comfortable, you can carry meditation that way.
Actually, once there was a very well-known, highly learned Mongolian scholar in Tibet, and it was reputed that whenever he was doing some serious reading of the text, he would do so by lying down.
So it's no problem. If you feel more comfortable, just lay down and think. And the kubja ni ala chamba gumbi kubja si suduwa. Same chance ni kubja si tan manju kimi chamba gumbi suduwa.
And in fact, if you look at the Buddhist iconography, Buddha Maitreya is sitting on a chair, a sort of a Western style chair. So you can do the same.
Now last question.
What is a simple daily practice for busy Westerners that would help towards wisdom and compassion?
So, So my suggestion or my advice, if anyone who seriously is showing interest about the practice of compassion, love, and then somewhat say, I think wisdom, I think first, most important, I think study. This is my feeling. This is my view. Once you gain fuller knowledge about the basic sort of whole structure of Buddha Dharma, then you can easily take essential as essential part. So I think first,
It's actually much more effective if you first develop a much broader understanding of the broader picture, and then you are in a position to extract whatever would be most relevant to your individual needs. If you, on the other hand, proceed from the opposite way, where you start from looking at kind of essential practices, extracts of here and there, then from there to acquire to see the overall picture is much harder.
So nowadays, the English translation about Buddhism in general, particularly Tibetan Buddhism, now more and more there. So read, study, and also some of the Geshe's and some of the teachers here in Australia. So then, discuss some important words or meanings. So once you gain some sort of sufficient sort of knowledge, then you can implement in daily more simple way. I think one example, some of my sort of prayer, some sadhana, some ritual or some visualization. When usually you see it take 1 hour, but then getting the essence,
So, for example, in the case of sadhana practice, which involves visualization, although the practice itself may be very long, but once you have gained familiarity with the overall structure of that particular practice, then you can condense that within shorter periods, say a few minutes.
So I feel the important is knowledge. So study is very, very, very crucial. So then, sometimes you see people from the West, among Tibetan also there, some they want the most simple, most sort of what's the day? Most simple and most best and simplest, and then quickest. As to say, questioners ask me, most simple, quickest, and most effective, easiest practice, or what kind of practice? Usually put that kind of a question. Then I also respond, then also cheapest. So that means, I think eventually the result is poorest, the cheapest method, quickest. I think the result also, I think the poorest. So therefore, if you want some, I think the good result, hard work. Even material field also, if you want more profit, You have to work hard. So the spiritual field also, the mental development, particularly I think mental development. I think the difference is in a material field or technology, one person done up to a certain stage, then another person, you see, follow that work and further development. Then another person, further development. But as far as the spiritual is concerned, oneself.
So in the realm of spiritual practice, even if there might be individuals who have made great progress, another individual cannot build on that and carry forward. Every individual has to really go through the whole process from start to finish.
So therefore, you have to work hard and should not expect too much. And determine, once you committed, determine to carry continuously your practice in daily basis. And then after years, years, eventually you will get some inner some kind of evolution. Then you get some kind of genuine satisfaction and conviction. Then you become a better person. Then your friends may appreciate more. Thank you. Thank you, that's all. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Your Holiness. My name is Alan Malloy. I'm the National Director of the organising body that made this tour happen. Thank you. It's a bit hard to follow, Your Holiness, isn't it? Look, the main reason we're here is to say thank you. You know, thank you to His Holiness. Thank you for your wisdom and compassion. Thank you for coming to Australia. We're deeply indebted. We realise we were very, very lucky. And so thank you so much from your family. So today is the conclusion of the tour. About 100,000 Australian people have been directly in contact with His Holiness. It's extraordinary. It's amazing, really. This is some of the biggest crowds that, for some reason, Australians love His Holiness's message. We flock to it, and it's extremely heartening. And so thank you to all the audiences, to you people here, to people outside, and to people in all the venues of this magnificent tour. When we started organising this visit, we had three goals. One was to get as many Australians to see and hear His Holiness. We've achieved that. The second goal was to bring His message to the next generation of people. We've achieved that with our youth events in Melbourne, Geelong and Sydney. And also I hope we've given you a pathway now to follow up this interest that His Holiness has kindled for the support of Tibet and for your further studies of His Holiness's philosophy. There is one point I need to make, and I'd like to talk about the financial aspects of the tour. I want you to understand that we would love to make all these events free. We would love to, but a lot of our expenses were very high, in particular, for example, insurances, etc. Where we have ticketed events, we've charged the absolute minimum to make the events pay for themselves. Now, we've got free events. Today's a free event. This afternoon, we've had free events in Melbourne and Geelong as well. It appears that we'll have... Thank you. It appears we'll have a very small surplus, less than $100,000. His Holiness has made it clear that he will not accept the excess funds from this tour. He will not accept this money. He's asked us to distribute it, and we will distribute it to Tibetan organisations, Tibetan support organisations in Australia and overseas. And these organisations will include health, education, resettlement, etc., etc., to help the Tibetan people. A small amount will be held in trust for future visits. It's the seed for a future visit of His Holiness to Australia. Now I would like to say thank you. Thank you to His Holiness that everyone is his entourage. But also thank you to the people who financially supported the visit. Our benefactors, underwriters and friends, they're mainly on the floor here. These people here, you people, you made this visit happen. Thank you for the people of Australia. Thank you. We have many sponsors, donors, and then we've got a team of a small army of volunteers, in particular from the board of the company, the national executive, the committees, in particular the Sydney committee. We have over 600 volunteers that made this happen. They come from all walks of life, professional and non-professional. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. So now, once again, I can only say to His Holiness, on behalf of the people of Australia, thank you. Thank you for your love, your wisdom, your compassion. Please come again in the years to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.